Tonight, we're going to talk about something that has been intriguing me for a long time, and that is success. Everybody's talking about success today. And I doubt that a lot of people know what it really means. And I'd like to tell you a little story about a loser first to get everything in proper perspective, you know, because for success, there's always got to be a loser. And who would know about losers more than cops, right, and firemen? And I'll tell you a little story here about a loser. Two policemen are driving down the street. It's late at night. They see a guy running toward them in their headlights. They catch the guy. He's flailing his arms right in the middle of the street. Stop, stop, the guy's yelling. The policeman stops. The guy runs up. He opens the back door and he jumps in. He says, "Take me to jail. I'm guilty." He said, "What is going on here? Sit down, you know, relax." They look at the guy. His clothes are just tattered and torn. The guy's bleeding. He's just a total wreck. Guy's shaking. So what happened? When the guy finally could get his composure, he relates to these two officers a little story. The guy decided that he was going to engage in a little career of crime. And so for his first venture, he picked out, in this crime of burglary, a little warehouse. And he was going to get inside there and get all the goodies. Well, unknown to our first-time career criminal, there was a security officer inside the warehouse. The guy got inside the warehouse. The security officer waited carefully for him to make his move. And when he did, he jumped up and fired three rounds at the guy. Well, if you've ever been shot at, and I have, you know, something very unusual takes place in the human organism. You know, you get wings to your feet that you never thought that you had. And this guy began to run. Somehow he got out of this place without being shot, and he found himself in a residential neighborhood. There are little homes and block walls around the homes and the fences. And so he runs to hit the first cinder block wall that comes to him to get out of the way of this guy, this security guard that's shooting at him. He goes over the top. Well, one of the first lessons they teach you in the police academy is, you know, before you jump over a wall, always check to see what's on the other side. He hadn't been at our police academy. And on the other side of this wall was a Doberman Pinscher. Now, the Doberman Pinscher had been to Doberman Pinscher guard school, you know. I can see this little school, you know, all these Doberman Pinschers out there, and the guy's got a little slide presentation. He says, "Now this is a burglar. You eat burglars for lunch." You know? And that's exactly what that Doberman Pinscher began to do, this poor guy. He began to eat on his leg. Unmercifully, got a hold of this guy. Now he's been shot at and bit. He's looking for a place to go, and he's in this rear yard, no place to go. He looks and he sees this window. He thinks, "I'm going to get out of here by jumping through that window." The window he thought was open, it wasn't, it was closed. Now he's jumping through the window. He gets all cut. His face is now cut from this window that was closed. Now he's been shot at, bit, and cut, right? On the other side of the window, underneath the window, is a guy sleeping in bed. The guy sleeping in bed has a knife underneath the pillow because he has been burglarized so often that he's ready now. The guy lands on top of him, and this guy began stabbing him. So, you know, after being shot at and bit and cut and stabbed, he runs outside and he sees these policemen coming and he gives himself up. Now, there is the definition of a loser. You want to know what a loser is? That's a loser. This poor guy has lost it. But success on the other side of the picture, and this poor guy didn't have it, success has been dominating a lot of thinking nowadays, and people are talking about success and they're literally driving themselves to death on the rocks of success. Everybody has to be successful. It's not good enough to be a physician. You have to be a successful physician. It's not enough to be a police officer. You have to be a successful one, or a dentist, or whatever. It's not good enough to be that. You have to be success at what you're doing. And it strikes me that, you know, it's sort of like an addiction. Police officers recognize, narcotic experts recognize, that there are three little elements in addiction that make a guy an addict. And number one of these is habit. You know, these people have to have this drug of success. And another one is dependence. You depend on the success for your very daily existence. And finally, there's tolerance. You know what tolerance means? That means you have to continually have more and more of the drug to get the same effect. And so what we have is a lot of success addicts running around. You have to be successful, and therefore you become addicted to the pattern of success that you drive yourself into. There's a compulsion there. Winning is the only thing, and winning is everything. You gotta be number one. The world system says it's not good enough to run in the race. You gotta win or you don't even count. You've got to win. You know, if I could be one of these roving reporters, and I could go into your town, and I could interview thousands of people on the street like they do, and I could walk up to people and I'd say, "Sir, in your opinion, how do you classify success? Ma'am, in your opinion, what is success?" And if they were to answer me with their lives rather than the words that came out of their mouth, words are superficial, aren't they? People say anything. If I had the ability to look beyond those words and look into their lives, into the way that they live those lives, I just wonder, what would those responses of those lives come back to me as to what is success? And I think I know, and I think you know. But I think there are five little categories of success. I call these the five P's of success. These would come back to me. I would put these little categories of success in little pigeonholes and say, oh, here's a life that's basing the success patterns on this, and here's one on that. What would they be? P1, position. Position. If I could only achieve that position, if I could only get that promotion, a little higher in the ladder, a little better so that I could assert a little more influence in a promotional way. And regardless of what they'll tell you, and in my department, I have some guys, they'll say, "I'm not interested in promoting," but you find them spending all their time studying for the next promotional exam because they got to get that promotion. You have to succeed. You've got to promote. It's expected of you. You're addicted to it. It demands it of you. You have to have position. P2, possessions. Possessions. If I could only have that house, a little nicer house, a little better house, just a little better than what we have now. If I could just own this or own that. My partner and I are driving down the street one day, and we're patrolling an area where we've had a lot of burglaries. So we're looking for burglar. What does a burglar look like? He doesn't usually have a sign on his forehead, "I am a burglar," you know. So we're looking for a clue. So we see a guy walking down the street, and he's got this AM, FM, tape deck, everything all combined. You've seen those units. And he's carrying it on his shoulder, and he's got the volume turned up about 18,000 decibels. You know, I mean, it's really loud. I can hear it as we're driving down the street. And he's walking along kind of contentedly lost in the music that's coming out of this little machine. And so I look at my partner and I said, "Just check this guy out." So we drove by and we gave this guy the cop look, you know. And the guy gives us back the guilty burglar look. We said, "We're going to talk to this guy." So we pull over. "Hi there." "Hi. Where'd you get that?" He says, "I got it off some dude for $5. And I think, "Right, you got it off some dude, all right." I said, "Could I see it?" He said, "Sure." So he hands it over to me. And now I begin this little street investigation situation. You see, I wanted to ask him some questions about this that maybe he wouldn't know how to answer. For example, if you stop somebody, this is a little academy class lesson that you learn. You stop somebody on the street and you think maybe they're driving a stolen car. You say to him, "Without looking at your odometer, how many miles are on that odometer?" And he'll say, 30,000. And you look down there, it's 29,999. You got him. No, he'll say 50,000 and there's 12,000 or something. And right there, that gives you a little edge to investigate a little bit more, because most people know roughly how many miles they got in the car. So I asked this guy, where is the play button? That's a simple question. If he knows how to this machine works, he ought to be able to know that. He said, it's right there. It wasn't right there. It was right over here on the other side. So I turned the thing over and I said, let's see what's on here. Press the button and words came out. I'll never forget what the words were. The words said this. Hello, this is a demonstration model at your downtown Bullock's department store. I said, get in the car. The guy says, let me show you how to press the erase button. I said, no, no way. This guy had to have a little bit more. He had to own something. And people like you and I, maybe we don't go out and steal something, but we still have this urge to possess. You've got to own something. You've got to have something that you could lay your fingers on. We buy things that we don't need with money that we don't have from people we don't even like. You know how that goes? We've got that urge to possess. P3, power. Power. Now this is where it really sort of comes together. This is the influence. This is domination over other people. If I could be known down at the country club as I drove up in my Rolls Royce, and the guy opened up my door and said, good afternoon, Mr. Glutzenheimer. I got out, took me inside. The maitre d' said, good afternoon, Mr. Glutzenheimer. Your table is ready. Took me over to my table and sat me down. Now that's power. And if I could only influence domination over other people, have control of their lives, make them do what I want. And more books are coming out brazenly open on this topic of domination over others. You see books like How to Assert Yourself. And there's one called The Power of Intimidation. You heard of that book? How to Be Number One or something like that. The whole idea is not leadership, which is entirely different. It's power. Brute power. Raw power. P4, popularity. Popularity. If I only could be accepted. If people liked me. And we read those books, How to Win Friends and so forth. Every one of us likes to be accepted. There's no one that really wants to be thrown out of places. You like to feel that you're liked. And people have this urge that goes beyond the average when they seek that position of popularity that says, I am a star. In Hollywood Division, where I work, everyone is a potential star. Believe me. You can be a star. They got to be popular. You got to be accepted. P5, pleasure. Pleasure. If I could only get that feeling, you know, that really special, pleasurable effect. You see these bumper stickers now, don't you? That say, if it feels good, what? Do it. If it feels good, do it. The whole standard is taken out for anything that has pleasurable impact on the human body. Drugs are taking us away with this. The whole idea of existentialism is exist, feel good while you can, because that's all there is to life. So pleasure dominates a lot of people. Now there you have that. What I would consider would be those little pockets where people's lives would put themselves in terms of their position on success. And I've asked myself, could it be that some one person has captured the pinnacle of all five of these combined? You know, a teacher of success in the world system would likely put his arm around his little student. And he would say to him, my son, select one of these criteria and then give yourself entirely to it. And when you reach the pinnacle of that one element, you will discover that you have all the rest. And certainly that's been the case with a lot of people. Maybe John F. Kennedy had a teacher that instructed him that way. And maybe John picked power as his theme of success. Certainly with the acquisition of power, he did have all the rest, didn't he? He had the popularity. He had the possessions, the positions, the pleasure. He had everything. But as we all know, one day that came to a sudden screeching halt for John F. Kennedy. That all ended. Someone had that memory long enough to remember in the 1923 gathering in Chicago of the world's most successful financiers, what became of those people. And this is sort of an interesting gathering of people, because at that convention was the president of the largest independent steel company, the greatest wheat speculator, the president of the New York Stock Exchange, a member of the president's cabinet, the greatest bear in Wall Street, the president of the Bank of International Settlements, and the head of the world's greatest monopoly. That's no lightweight group of people. And it was said that collectively, those tycoons controlled more wealth than was in the U.S. economy at that time. Those men. Just a few years later, 25 years later, now we're in 1948. Let's take a look at what became of those people. The president of the largest steel company, Charles Schwab, lived on borrowed money the last 5 years of his life, and he died broke. The greatest wheat speculator, Arthur Cutton, died abroad insolvent. The president of the New York Stock Exchange, Richard Whitney, was later released from Sing Sing prison. The member of the president's cabinet, Albert Fall, was pardoned from prison so he could die at home. The greatest bear in Wall Street, Jesse Livermore, committed suicide. The president of the Bank of International Settlements, Leon Fraser, committed suicide. And the head of the world's greatest monopoly, Ivar Kruger, committed suicide. You know, at that time, parents were telling their children, look, model your lives after these people. These people are successful. If you can devise the route that will take you to the pinnacle of success that these people have arrived at, you will truly be successful. And then you see what happened to them. But the teachers were gone when they met the end. If you ever watched Chico and the Man, there was a young man there named Freddie Prinze. Freddie Prinze was literally a rags-to-riches success story. And yet one day, Freddie took a gun and put it to his head and killed himself. Why did Freddie do that? And by the way, why do actors and actresses have such a high rate of suicide? Why do they kill themselves? I've asked myself that question. People that have this popularity and the possessions and the position, everything they ever wanted, the pleasure, the power, and they commit suicide. Why do they do that? And I've concluded that, like so many other people, they realize that there has to be an end to that. They realize suddenly that it's all temporary. It's all fading. It's all going to pass, and someday, whatever they are, they're going to be a has-been that. Somehow, we run a cycle of life that takes us back to the place where we began in this whole cycle of success. It doesn't go on forever. It has to end sometime. It ends. It will only last for a while. And life truly is a vapor. The Bible calls it, when referring to man, his days are as a shadow. Did you ever watch a shadow on the ground as a cloud sort of came in front of the sun, and it just was gone? All of a sudden it was there, and it just was gone. A vapor. You know, to a policeman and to firemen, life and death is a real situation. And I'm sure many of you have seen people close in leave this life. I was at the scene one night in a cold, rainy night, rain pouring down, shooting. Two people were laying in this dark alley. They'd both been shot. I was the first unit there. So I ran to one form lying there, and I found the carotid artery and put my thumb on it, felt for a pulse beat, and I felt two beats. Boom, boom, boom. Stop. He said, well, I'll go to the other one. Went to the other one. Amazing. The same thing. Boom, 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 boom. Stop. And those two people had left this life right under my hand. And I got up, and just before I went to doing all the things that you do at the scene of a double homicide, I looked down and I thought, life is a vapor. It's passing. And it passes so fast. It passed right under my eyes. They were there and then they were gone, just like a shadow. Life truly leaves us. A week ago today, I stood at a graveside and delivered a eulogy. I hope I never have to do this again. It was for one of my men. He had committed suicide. A week before he did this, he said to his wife, Darlene, you know, I have everything I want. I've got a nice house. I know I've got a loving wife. I've got beautiful children. I've got it all. I'm well accepted at work. My partners like me. I get good ratings. But I'm not happy. I'm not happy. I'm troubled inside. A few weeks later, there I was, standing at graveside, telling his brother officers the life and career of this young man. 7 years on the police department. Brilliant, young, aggressive street policeman. Telling about a guy that had left his life like a shadow. The Bible tells us, for all that is in the world, the lust of the eyes, the lust of the flesh, the pride of life is not of the Father, but it is of the world, and the world passeth away. It is leaving. It's not going to be here forever. Life is temporary. Every success pattern in life is a temporary success pattern. It is not a permanent one. You've heard the expression, the land of the living. We're not living in the land of the living. We're living in the land of the dead and dying. We're all dying. We're either dead or dying. Sometime, some way, somehow, we will all be dead. We can't live forever. Those success patterns that drive us won't be there forever. Someday, we will reckon with the eternity. We're all has-beens. Has-beens in the making. But, let me tell you a little success story. The story of the most successful man who ever lived. He was a wandering preacher. This man had no clothes except the clothes that he wore on him. He was not accepted. He was not popular. He was no royal guest in any court. He was not well loved. His close friends abandoned him. One of them betrayed him for some money. He was arrested. He was prosecuted. He was mocked. He was beat. He was convicted as a common criminal, and he was executed while totally innocent. Now you say, that does not sound like a story of a successful person. And yet it is. It's the story of the most successful person who ever lived. Because it's the story of Jesus Christ. In the 3 short years of his ministry, Jesus Christ, while he was on this earth, rocked the very foundations of world history. He gave to us a calendar. Some people say, I don't believe in Christ. And yet you say, what year is this? 1978. 1978 what? 1978 AD, Anno Domini, the year of our Lord. That's what year this is. He implanted in space and time a date where he was born. History marks itself on that date. There's a successful man. So what was it? What was that spectacular feature about the success of this man? I'll tell you what it is. Jesus Christ conquered the temporary. Or, get a hold of this one. He killed death. You say, how can a guy kill death? You know, I told you last night that scientific verification and historic authenticity, all these things that build the pillars of our faith, the reasonable belief that we have, it's not a vain abstraction, it's not a dumb belief, it's very reasonable. And to a policeman, I'm always interested in evidence. And so one period, I conducted an investigation into this claim of the bodily resurrection of Christ. And after studying this and looking at all the evidence, I made a conclusion that the bodily resurrection of Jesus Christ is an adequate historical fact of history. In fact, I believe that there is enough evidence for the bodily resurrection of Christ that you could prove this in any court of law in the world today. There's that much evidence. What's the problem? People won't admit it into the court of their heart. The evidence is there. The evidence is in. Jesus Christ conquered the temporary by raising from the dead. Why was he successful? He was successful because he measured his success pattern not on this world system, but on the will of the Father, on God's Word. He wouldn't take a standard of a dying world and attach to that his measure of success. He was carrying out the will of the Father. Well, you say, okay, he was doing God's standard. What is God's standard? Well, God's standard is in this book, in the Bible. Well, you say, okay, that's good. But between here and here, there's this big gap. No, and I don't really understand it. I would like to take the Bible, and I would like to apply it to the energies of my life. I would like to form a success pattern that's based on God's standard. But there's a problem here between this and this. And I don't understand the Bible. Well, let me tell you a little story to illustrate this. There was a girl, a college co-ed in a college. She made an acquaintance of one of her professors. And over a period of time, the two of them fell hopelessly in love. They were in love. And one day, she was talking to this professor friend of hers, who had now become more than a friend. And he said, "How are things going?" And she said, "Things are going pretty good. How is this class? How is that class? How is your text in that class?" "The text is terrible." "Well, what do you mean it's terrible?" "I don't understand it. It's dry. It's long. I can't get the meaning out of it." He said, "What is the text?" She told him. He said, "That's the text?" She said, "Yeah." He says, "I wrote that book." All of a sudden, just like that, something very unusual happened. She went back to that book. She opened up the pages, and every word leaped out to her. It had new meaning. It had new importance to her somehow. It had a value. Somehow she could see into it things that she never saw before. Why did that happen? Because this young girl had fallen in love with the author. Listen, you will never understand this book until you fall in love with the author of this book. You have to encounter that author first before you can begin to apply the principles of this book to energize your life. It's just an impossibility. It will not mean anything to you. It's a big book. It's a long book. It looks dry when you look at it. But when you fall in love with the author and you come to grips as to who he is, then this book will have meaning. It'll have purpose and it'll add value to your life and a standard for living out a success pattern that is not a dying success pattern, but is one that is beyond the temporary. It's eternal. Well, you say, now, how do you come to know the author? How do you come to know the author of that book? And this is such a simple, beautiful story, and people compound it so badly. If you've ever been to Disneyland and you go down there and the Pirates of the Caribbean, have you ever been down there, Pirates of the Caribbean? And you go down there and you see these prisoners in the jail. And outside there's this dog, and the dog has in his mouth the key. Have you ever seen that? He's got the key to the jail. And these guys are saying, "Come here, come over here." They're trying to get that dumb dog to get over there. Every time I go with my kids, I say, "Maybe this time the prisoners will be out, you know." But they never do. They stay in there. all the time trying to get out. And that's the way it is with so many people. The key is there, and they keep on just sort of avoiding confronting it. And it's such a simple, beautiful, and clear story. Jack has talked to us about it, and his songs have reflected. The story is there. It's very clear. It's a story about how God took this universe and splashed it into being. And then he created this earth. He set it in its 186 million mile orbit. And after he did that, and after he created man, then he invaded this planet with the person of Jesus Christ. He said, we are going to go into that planet. And it says in the Bible, the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. Us mere mortal people. And when you consider the vast infinity of this universe, and you consider for a minute that the God of this universe, as Jack said already when he was talking to us, came into this world and invaded this world and became a man as we are, that's an astounding fact, and to me, just as astounding as the entire creation of the universe itself. But he did that. This man then became the most successful man that ever lived. And the reason that he was successful? Because he conquered the temporary. Or as we said, he killed death. And he arose. But in doing that, something happened. Each of us, each one of us, is bearing this load. It's called a rap sheet in police work. It's called all our sins, all our the record. You committed this sin. There's a long list. And you know, I've seen a lot of people in the criminal justice system, and sometimes I don't have too much compassion. Every now and then I get a little compassion. And sometimes I've looked across from people that I've been interviewing, and I said, there but for the grace of God go I. I could be that person. And I've thought in a compassionate way sometime, man, if I could pay that bail, I would do it. I would do it. But for not one person that I have seen arrested for a capital offense, a capital crime, that is, one punishable by execution, for not one person would I be willing to go there and die. I would not be willing. And yet that's exactly what this God-man did. He took our place on the cross, he paid that bail, and he said, I will die for you in your place. And he did. But he didn't stay there. He arose. And he conquered the temporary. He's alive today. And there's plenty of evidence of that. John 3:16 says, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believes in him should not perish. Those are beautiful words. I have come, he said, that you might have life, and that you might have it, what? More abundantly. Not only will he give you life, he's offering to give you a resource of life, an abundant life, more than life itself, living abundantly, and most importantly, victory over the temporary. Well, let me tell you how I came to know the author of that book. For me, it was an if-then situation. Cops are so logical. You know, it was to me, if God, in fact, created this universe, and if he invaded this planet, and if he paid my bail, and if he was executed for me, and if he arose, and if he offers to me the redemption, there's a word, that provides for me a solution to the problem of man's sin, where I am condemned to death, and if that great love is offered toward me, then, on this side, what should be my reaction to that? And after I got all these ifs together, you know, the then was very easy. I said in my mind, I have to react to that. I can't let that go by. When I comprehended all that had been done in my stead, I could not sit idly by and say, then, forget it. I couldn't do it. And I came to the point where I took my whole life and I staked it all, I gambled it all on that one promise that Jesus Christ is alive today. And I said, I will accept that promise. I will accept Christ into my life, and I will surrender my life to him. Well, believe me, since that time, life has held a certain special different meaning for me. And I have not wandered in life. I have had a fantastic journey through life that has taken me over the hills and valleys that are so many of those success patterns. Some people say to me, hey, you made captain. You're only so many years on the job and you're this much young. And I say, right, it's temporary. I am a has-been captain in the making. One day I'll be an ex, whatever I am. But one thing is for sure, I am a permanent Christian. I will live forever because that's been the promise that Christ gave. I have come that you might have life and that you might have it more abundantly. He offers that to us. I think there are five little categories of success. I call these the five P's of success. These would come back to me. I would put these little categories of success in little pigeonholes and say, oh, here's a life that's basing the success patterns on this, and here's one on that. What would they be? P1, position. Position. If I could only achieve that position, if I could only get that promotion, a little higher in the ladder, a little better so that I could assert a little more influence in a promotional way. P2, possessions. Possessions. If I could only have that house, a little nicer house, a little better house, just a little better than what we have now. If I could just own this or own that. P3, power. Power. Now this is where it really sort of comes together. This is the influence. This is domination over other people. If I could be known down at the country club as I drove up in my Rolls Royce, and the guy opened up my door and said, good afternoon, Mr. Glutzenheimer. I got out, took me inside. The maitre d' said, good afternoon, Mr. Glutzenheimer. Your table is ready. Took me over to my table and sat me down. Now that's power. For us, likes to be accepted. There's no one that really wants to be thrown out of places. You like to feel that you're liked. And people have this urge that goes beyond the average when they seek that position of popularity that says, I am a star. In Hollywood Division, where I work, everyone is a potential star. Believe me. You can be a star. They gotta be popular. You gotta be accepted. P5, pleasure. Pleasure. If I could only get that feeling, you know, that really special, pleasurable effect. You see these bumper stickers now, don't you? That say, if it feels good, what? Do it. If it feels good, do it. The whole standard is taken out for anything that has pleasurable impact on the human body. Drugs are taking us away with this. The whole idea of existentialism is exist, feel good while you can, because that's all there is to life.
You left a dying man. Some people say you lost it all. I think it all was planned. I think you knew right from the start just what the end would be. And I believe that Jesus did it all for me.
The story of the most successful man who ever lived. He was a wandering preacher. This man had no clothes except the clothes that he wore on him. He was not accepted. He was not popular. He was no royal guest in any court. He was not well loved. His close friends abandoned him. One of them betrayed him for some money. He was arrested. He was prosecuted. He was mocked. He was beat. He was convicted as a common criminal, and he was executed while totally innocent. Now you say, that does not sound like the story of a successful person. And yet it is. It's the story of the most successful person who ever lived. Because it's the story of Jesus Christ. In the 3 short years of his ministry, Jesus Christ, while he was on this earth, rocked the very foundations of world history. He gave to us a calendar. Some people say, I don't believe in Christ. And yet you say, what year is this? 1978. 1978 what? 1978 A.D. Anno Domini, the year of our Lord. That's what year this is. He implanted in space and time a date where he was born. History marks itself on that date. There's a successful man. So what was it? What was that spectacular feature about the success of this man? I'll tell you what it is. Jesus Christ conquered the temporary.
He prayed and cried and wept and died, did all that he could do. And I believe that Jesus did it all for you.
Are human, it's true, and I think firefighters are human too, and every now and then, maybe even you make mistakes. I recall a guy telling me that he had responded to a scene of a barricaded suspect, and he somehow managed to get right up to the door, which you don't normally do, you keep your distance and so forth. Well,
He got up to the door inside this building. He was right next to the door, and he had a gun in one hand and a gas grenade in the other. And as he moved up to the door, he kicked the door in and threw his gun in the room with the banner. So he stood by and he looked at this gas grenade in his hand, you know, now what am I going to do with this? But fortunately, or unfortunately for the guy inside, he was already dead, and so he went and quickly retrieved his gun, and he didn't tell the story for years and years. No one knew. But cops are human, it's true. Is not what is faith or who has faith, because we know what faith is. It's a reasonable belief. It's founded on something. The question is, what is the object of your faith? Which of those windows have you put your faith in? There's so much today that you can have faith in. Everybody's talking about transcendental meditation, transactional analysis, huggy buddy, facey kissy, huggy, all this stuff about sensitivity analysis, I'm okay, you're so-so, all this stuff. The idea is not the business about faith, it is the object of your faith. What have you put your faith in? That's my question for you tonight and for this weekend to get together. And believe me, if you have not put your faith in Jesus Christ, you're just headed for that open window.
Jesus, oh Jesus.
has called me and I must obey. He gave me love.
There was a girl, a college co-ed in a college. She made an acquaintance of one of her professors, and over a period of time, the two of them fell hopelessly in love. They were in love. And one day, she was talking to this professor friend of hers, who had now become more than a friend, and he said, "How are things going?" And she said, "Things are going pretty good. How is this class? How is that class? How is your text in that class?" "The text is terrible." "Well, what do you mean it's terrible?" "I don't understand it. It's dry. It's long. I can't get the meaning out of it." He said, "What is the text?" She told him. He said, "That's the text?" She says, "Yeah." He says, "I wrote that book." All of a sudden, just like that, something very unusual happened. She went back to that book. She opened up the pages, and every word leaped after her. It had new meaning. It had new importance to her somehow. It had a value. Somehow she could see into it things that she never saw before. Why did that happen? Because this young girl had fallen in love with the author. Listen, you will never understand this book until you fall in love with the author of this book. You have to encounter that author first before you can begin to apply the principles of this book to energize your life. It's just an impossibility. It will not mean anything to you. It's a big book. It's a long book. It looks dry when you look at it. But when you fall in love with the author and you come to grips as to who he is, then this book will have meaning. It will have purpose, and it will add value to your life. And the standard for living out a success pattern that is not a dying success pattern, but is one that is beyond the temporary.